This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Zimbabwe hovers in a state of uncertainty after the nation's army moved on the capital Tuesday night. After nearly four decades in office, President Robert Mugabe appears to have finally gone too far in firing his vice president and positioning his wife to succeed him.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up.
Also, the United Nations is helping Cameroon register thousands of births on its northern border with Nigeria that have gone unreported over the past 4 years amid the Boko Haram conflict.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story, Zimbabwe's longtime president is confined to his home. South Africa's president said today, leaving Robert Mugabe's fate uncertain after what increasingly appears to be a military-backed effort to oust him after 37 years in power. Social media accounts report the mood is tense in Harare, the capital, as some businesses closed early. For more on this developing story, I earlier spoke with Zimbabwe service reporter Gibbs Dube.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Great, Gibbs. Thank you. So can you please tell us what is the mood on the ground right now in Zimbabwe?
Right. As we speak right now, Kim, the situation is really fluid. And what we're seeing is that the army is still around Harare and is confined to Harare only. We have been talking to people in different cities. They're saying the situation is very calm. And in Harare, too, it's calm, but there's that kind of tension, you know, between civilians and the ruling elite, you know, and the army. So at the end of the day, is a situation that may actually be going the other way in terms of maybe getting worse or maybe for the better. We don't know.
What is the military's, what is their strategy going to be at this point? What will they be doing now? Because they are, I guess, still patrolling the streets.
Yes, they are basically patrolling the streets. And we're told that some of them are actually guarding the president. And the president has been put under house arrest together with Professor Jonathan Moyo. He was the higher education minister, finance minister Ignatius Chombo, and several other ministers. So we're told that they have not been harmed. But the military perhaps is trying to come out with a transitional government. That's what we're getting right now. And indications are that the ousted vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, could be coming back to Zimbabwe, or he has already landed. There were reports that he had come back from South Africa, and he may be crafting a transitional government together with former ZIPRA military supremo, that is Dumiso Tabengwa, and people like Moken Tsvangirai of the opposition MTC party. So we're also told that the former vice president, Joyce Mjuru, may be joining the three, you know, in terms of crafting that kind of government, but is not yet confirmed.
Also, with this transitional government, this would be them turning the government over to the people. So would they then be voting?
Is not too clear. You know, in this transitional government is something that is out there. You know, if you try to talk to the army, they tell you we don't discuss such issues to the press. They want to settle their matters, and they are saying that when they're done with everything, they're going to make an announcement. Whatever announcement it is, we're not quite sure. But indications are that maybe they'll come out with a sort of like transitional government to soften the hearts of the people. Coincidentally, the majority of Zimbabweans that we're talking to are actually supporting this move. They are saying President Mugabe has been in power for 37 years and has actually totally destroyed Zimbabwe. So they are really unhappy. They're saying maybe the military may take over for a short period and then hand over to a civilian government. But in most cases, when you look at the history of African coups, it's not too fast in terms of handing over a rule to civilians. So they take their time and do whatever they want.
And looking at Zimbabwe's military, what is the makeup of the military? For instance, are there any factions in the military? Do some of them support Mugabe?
There are roughly about three generals that we believe that are actually supporting President Mugabe. And one of them is Brigadier General Douglas Nikayaramba. This is a guy that, you know, has been very vocal in terms of supporting the president for a very, very long time. And then we've got in the police force, Augustin Chihuri, is the commissioner of police. You know, he hasn't said anything, nothing, I mean. So meaning that he may still be, you know, trying to resist a little bit because we are seeing some police being detained by the army in most corners, you know. They just take those guys, put them in a group and disarm them and say, okay, we're going to guard you for a certain period. So at the end of the day, maybe the police still believe that Mr. Mugabe is still in charge, which is not the case.
And looking at just really what was the breaking point in this case, many say that it was looking at Grace Mugabe, who was perhaps going to become vice president, to then become president of Zimbabwe. What are people saying about this?
That's part of the problem that was actually created by a faction of the party called the Generation 40 or G40. So this G40 comprises people who never went to the liberation struggle in the 1970s. So these are people who actually were yearning for power, we just put it like that. So they didn't want to see anybody who was associated with the liberation war. So they were trimming the party in order to aim at putting the first lady, maybe as the vice president initially, and then the president. Remember, the first lady was always going on stage, actually saying, Mr. President, can you give us somebody who's going to succeed you? And ultimately, things were happening because ZANU-PF was supposed to hold what is called an extraordinary Congress at the end of this year. But the Congress maybe has been put on ice. We don't know. It may happen just for the sake of it. But as we speak right now, G40 was actually spearheading towards that Congress. And these G40 guys, they'd actually gotten rid of all the war veterans. Imagine you get rid of all the war veterans and you think you can survive. I guess not.
What is her whereabouts at this time?
Right, so the people that we are talking to are saying that President Jacob Zuma actually talked to the military and negotiated that Grace Mugabe should leave and go to Namibia. So we are told that she may be in Namibia, but it's still uncertain, but we think that's the case.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Gibbs, for stopping by and giving us an update on the Zimbabwe situation.
Thank you so much, Kim.
As reported, Zimbabwe is hovering in a state of uncertainty after the nation's army moved on the capital yesterday. After nearly four decades in office, President Robert Mugabe appears to have finally gone too far in firing his vice president and positioning his wife to succeed him. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
No one saw it coming, and yet everyone saw it coming. For at least a decade, Zimbabwe's standards of living have been sliding. Its economy is in shambles, its health system in tatters, its elections discredited, its infrastructure a shadow of the promise the nation held when it gained independence in 1980. In recent years, protest movements came and went, journalists spoke up and were silenced, and nearly a million citizens claimed political asylum in neighboring South Africa. But throughout that, it appeared that nothing would challenge the supremacy of the only leader Zimbabwe has ever known, President Robert Mugabe. But then, when the aging president fired his deputy and indicated that he would replace him with his unpopular wife, Grace Mugabe, the head of the armed forces warned he would step in unless Mugabe stopped trying to purge the ruling party of supporters of the ousted vice president. That, says analyst Piers Pigou of the International Crisis Group, was the tipping point.
Something obviously had to give, particularly over the last week and the last few days when the situation has become a lot more tense. He said that we will intervene, and I think that a number of people thought that this was a bluff, that he wouldn't intervene, that Mugabe still retained some measure of control of the situation.
It's now clear that General Constantina Chiwenga was not bluffing. After tanks were seen rumbling through Harare on Tuesday, soldiers took over state TV in the wee hours of Wednesday. An Army spokesman, Major General S.B. Moyo, delivered this stunning statement.
Comrade R.I.G. Mugabe and his family are safe and sound and their security is guaranteed. We are only targeting criminals around him who are committing crimes that are causing social and economic suffering in the country in order to bring them to justice.
But the drama may be just beginning. Zimbabwe's ruling party said on social media that Mnangagwa will return and take the helm, as they say the constitution provides. But Pigu says a change in leadership will not, on its own, solve Zimbabwe's woes.
Much now depends, of course, on the line that is taken by whichever political force comes to power, and we believe that will be Mr. Mnangagwa will be brought back now. Is he going to open the door to some kind of inclusive political settlement? Bearing in mind that the economic and the social situation in Zimbabwe is so dire that it does require an intervention that goes beyond the normal political arena.
And of course, everyone is wondering what will come of the power couple at the heart of this drama. Few analysts think that Mugabe and his wife will themselves face the retributive rage of the Zimbabwean people. Analyst Alex Magaisa of the University of Kent predicts a soft landing for them, but thinks that Mugabe's longtime cheerleaders are in for a tough time.
Perhaps they might have to leave the country in order to avoid having that pocket of power, which would be challenging. But I think those who are aligned to the first family, to President Mugabe and his wife, I think they are the ones who are going to face the brunt of the new regime.
For years, "Mugabe is right" was the rallying cry of Zimbabwe's powerful elite. Those who questioned the powerful leader were vilified or punished. But now, with Zimbabwe's strongmen suddenly silent, the questions are mounting. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Anita. For a closer look at President Robert Mugabe and his rise to power, we go to reporter Richard Green.
Born in 1924 in what was then called Rhodesia, Mugabe's rise to power began in 1974, when he was released from prison after serving 10 years for subversion. The scholar and former school teacher became the leader of a prolonged guerrilla war against white minority rule.
There is no short cut to be the leader of the people. Just as there was no short cut to our independence, we had to walk the long walk.
His efforts bore fruit in 1980. When he became prime minister of the newly independent nation of Zimbabwe. Praised in the early years of his rule for his pragmatic approach to governing, Mugabe steadily began consolidating power over the next decade, launching a brutal crackdown on opponents that led to the deaths of thousands of Zimbabweans. Mugabe's decision to seize land from white farmers transformed Zimbabwe from the economic breadbasket of Africa to the continent's economic basket case, complete with triple-digit inflation, mass unemployment, and worthless currency. Mugabe solidified his hold on power in 2008 when his loss to opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai in the first round of presidential elections led to political violence against Tsvangirai's supporters, forcing Tsvangirai to withdraw from the runoff vote. By the time he won re-election in 2012, Zimbabwe had become an international pariah, and Mugabe was considered as just another of the African continent's big men, autocratic leaders whose rule was tainted by corruption, economic waste, and intolerance of dissent. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
The swift and nonviolent ouster of Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe by the military has left much of Africa and the international community surprised and scurrying for a response. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, John Campbell, at the Council on Foreign Relations for his thoughts on what the American response has been and is likely to be in these early stages.
It's still a bit early for a statement from the State Department or from the White House. I would anticipate that at this early date, a statement would essentially call for calm and the avoidance of conflict. Zimbabwe is much less important to the United States now than it was 10 or 15 years ago. The rather dreary history of Zimbabwean human rights abuses, rigged elections, and so forth that have characterized Robert Mugabe's governance, and the fact that it has been very difficult to make any progress means that even amongst those very interested in Africa, attention has essentially shifted elsewhere. The principal international player with respect to Zimbabwe remains South Africa.
Now, when you say the Americans are not as interested in Zimbabwe as they once were, still, presumably, there is a stake in following the democratic niceties in terms of, you know, just not deposing a president because you don't like him. Do you think that that will be part of the American response?
The first point, I think, is that the coup makers, I think, will be very careful not to use language to the effect that they have deposed Robert Mugabe. I expect that whoever ends up actually running the country will retain Mugabe as at least a figurehead, something that's really quite clever from the perspective of the coup makers. So I would expect that at least in early days, any statement from Washington about whether it was a coup or not will be avoided. For one thing, if, in fact, the administration determines that a coup has taken place, there are certain congressionally mandated steps that that have to be taken. And I think certainly in the early days, those making American policy towards Zimbabwe will want to avoid having their options limited or boxed in.
That was former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, John Campbell, speaking to VOA's Adam Phillips.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib. 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. South Africa's president says longtime Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe is confined to his home in what appears to be a military-backed effort to oust him after 37 years in power. Because of that, Zimbabwe hovers in a state of uncertainty after the nation's army moved on the capital yesterday. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The United Nations is helping Cameroon register thousands of births on its northern border with Nigeria that have gone unreported over the past 4 years amid the Boko Haram conflict. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Maroua, the capital of the far north region, where the first phase of the initiative has just wrapped up.
Hundreds of school children queue up at the government high school in Mozuku in northern Cameroon to receive their birth certificates. Among them is 13-year-old Muhammadu Dani, who was sent home from the entrance exam for secondary school last year because he had no record of his existence.
J'ai eu l'acte, j'ai eu le cahier.
He says he is thankful as he can now go to school without fear because he has a birth certificate and books. Cameroon's government estimates that 30% of children nationwide lack birth certificates, but the situation is particularly bad in the north, near the border with Nigeria. There, as many as 80% of children lack birth certificates. It is not uncommon for parents to wait until a child is preparing to start school to obtain a birth certificate, but mass displacement due to the Boko Haram conflict has complicated matters. The government estimates that less than 5% of births in the region have been registered since 2013 as both families and officials fled atrocities.
Mesurant tous l'importance.
Cameroon's Minister of Public Service, Michel Ange Angouin, says birth certificates are important to individuals and the state, which needs an accounting of its citizens. He says he is urging all birth registration officials who have been absent to return to work immediately. A regional military offensive begun in 2015 has weakened Boko Haram, retaking much of the territory the militants once occupied. Over the past 2 months, Cameroon's government has partnered with the UN to issue 17,000 birth certificates in the far north region. Allegra Bauchi, the UN resident coordinator in Cameroon, says a birth certificate is a fundamental human right.
Birth certificate allows you to go to school, allows you to move, allows you to eventually one day get a job, allows you to vote. So it's a fundamental piece of paper for everyone.
As the exercise continues, local school authorities have also been instructed to admit all children, giving the parents until the first official exam to provide the birth certificates. However, other challenges remain. Birth registration centers are very far from some of the villages. As many as 70% of babies in the region are delivered at home by traditional health attendants, so their mothers lack conventional medical records. And given the mass influx of Nigerian refugees, it can be difficult to establish the parents' nationalities. Communities on both sides of the border with Nigeria speak the same languages like Kanuri and Hausa, and some mothers are afraid that they may be sent back to Nigeria if they disclose their nationality. In 2015, the government of Cameroon and the UN Refugee Agency began issuing Nigerian children's birth certificates with the hope their government will accept them when the refugees return. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Marwa, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.